Hello and welcome along to another RTE Rugby podcast. Our second podcast of this week, actually, in case you missed it. I caught up with Ireland international Bavin Parsons and Ulster's emerging Ireland talent Zach Ward yesterday for a chat. Do hop in and have a listen to that as well. We'll also be bumping things up to two pods a week during the November Autumn Nations series. Four games for Ireland, starting with the All Blacks on Friday week. So we'll have two pods out next week looking ahead to that. Possibly Tuesday and Thursday. We're still working out the logistics of it, but we will have two podcasts for you. For this week, Bernard Jackman is with me as usual, and Johnny Murphy is back with us as well. Johnny, coming to us live from Italy. You're out there with the Ireland under-18 clubs team. First of two games this week coming up later today. How are you getting on with all that?
Yeah, it's been great. The lads flew out first thing on Saturday morning, and they've been here since then. I flew out after AIL on Saturday evening, and yeah, it's been really good. Really good exposure for these guys. You know, they're playing. Italy have kind of one team, so no schools and clubs. So it'll be two tough test matches for them, and jersey presentation last night. So it's actually the first jersey that anyone of this age group gets from an Irish perspective. So it's really cool, step on their first path from an Irish perspective on the pathway, and really enjoyable to see that and be part of it. So looking forward to two tough games, and hopefully we can get a result.
Nice to mention the the lads getting a first jersey and stuff like that as well. I might be one for both of you. What was the first international underage jersey of any kind of description like that you would have got down the years?
My first one was actually an Ireland A, and it's one of the things that probably Birch is going to slag me at some events that he's been doing over the last couple of weeks. But I think I'm Ireland myself, and Ian Humphries might be Ireland's joint top cap Ireland A player, not necessarily an accolade you want. My first one was in Exeter. We played New Zealand Māori. A bit of a baptism of fire. I was marking Jose Gere. That was in 2007. Actually, Earlsey scored a wonder try in the first couple of minutes in that Churchill Cup. So, that was my first Irish jersey.
Bernard?
I'm not sure whether it was an Irish colleges jersey to play Scottish colleges or an Ireland A jersey to play our England A in Richmond. But I remember Trevor Brennan was getting his first cap for Ireland A as well, and it was really calm. I was just saying, oh, this is nice. No one's getting overly hyped up. And then about 10 minutes before we left the dressing room, he completely lost the plot and was talking about 400 years of persecution and all kinds of stuff. it was hilarious. It was real old school. But that's my memory of it. Yeah, it was funny.
And before we just move on from that then, Johnny, so the Ireland 18 clubs, obviously people would be familiar with the school system, but these are the lads who kind of aren't affiliated to the bigger schools around the country, and as the name suggests, have kind of made their name through the clubs around the country.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, last night on the video presentation, we had videos from internationals that have come through this pathway. So Jack O'Donoghue, Alan O'Connor, and Tyke Furlong, Carty 10 from Connacht. So and really nice videos for the lads to see, and guys genuinely being proud of where they came from and what part. Carty speaks of kind of the chip on the shoulder that guys can have coming from that youth, because it's a different pathway to what the schools get. They get, they get less contact time, and that's why it's something like this within the Irish pathway is so important. Some of these guys will then go into kind of the Irish 18s pathway at Christmas, and then they'll go into their version of the Six Nations at Easter time. So hopefully some of the guys in this room will be on the plane to the Irish 20s World Cup in 2 years' time. So it's a really valid an integral part of the pathway, and one that probably needs to be bolstered a bit. And they're putting a lot of resources between kind of the youth select programs in the provinces, and opportunities like this for them for the youth players to really try to bump up that contact time that they get.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would disagree that, you know, there needs to be more exposure given and more opportunities given to the people coming through outside of that traditional school system. So very best of luck this evening and at the weekend as well. We'll get into the big news of the week, obviously. And just to warn you, if you are a Leinster, Ulster or Connacht fan, I apologise in advance. This is going to be a Munster-heavy podcast. I'm sure you can understand for the weekend that's in it. No URC this weekend. Birch, after we had our bank holiday, I logged into work yesterday morning. Thought this was going to be a relatively slow working week, trying to piece together. God, well, I'll probably have to try pick out a couple of features to do for this weekend, or I did. I'll need to come up with something to fill out these next few days. And all of a sudden, the bomb drops from Munster Rugby about 10:30 yesterday morning. Graham Rowntree is no longer the head coach. Your initial reaction when you saw the news?
Yeah, well, I was shocked to be honest. I didn't never heard anything rumbling underneath. Last year I knew there was a bit of tension in the dressing room, but I don't mind that. I mean, that's for me, that's normal in a team who have fallen back from where they were, or our team are trying to build something, that you have a bit of tension. Obviously, the RG Snyman not being able to keep him, and then him signing for Leinster wouldn't have been ideal. That would have caused friction. Antoine Frisch, under contract, breaking his being released to go to Toulon. And again, I don't blame Munster. I don't blame Munster for the Frisch part of it, because once a player wants to go, you're behind the eight ball. But this is was a shock to me. Okay, the start of the season has been tough. But realistically, what they won or two home games. They played four away games. Stormers are pretty average at the moment, but it's still a hard game on paper. Sharks obviously is a hard game. Leinster away is a hard game. The only real blip was the Zebra game, So, I don't know. Like, obviously, like, where has this come from? Has he stepped down? I wouldn't like the whole mutual stuff. I mean, it's normally the way it works anyway. So, but have Munster let him go? Has he decided to walk? Is it a bit of both? I do think if you're Graham Rowntree is absolutely passionate and committed to Munster. He was, right? He's had 5 years there. He took on a bit of a basket case, I think, after Johan. I think there's been mismanagement of player development. I think there's been mismanagement of recruitment. There's been mismanagement of player spend for the last 6, 7 years. And effectively, this year he was asked to reduce his budget again, when it was pretty obvious to anyone on the street that they needed better players. You know what I mean? So that's a tough thing to do as a coach. And if he wasn't allowed to sign a loose head prop last week, that could drive a head coach over the edge. When you feel, and I'm not sure if we don't know the answer to that, but if that was the case, that you felt you were being undermined or you weren't being supported, someone of his stature in the game is within his right to challenge that, I think. So, and I do think he hasn't been supported. I think they haven't been supported as well as they should be. And I go back.
Do you mind if I jump in there? You say
Yeah.
hasn't been supported by the higher ups at the province or higher ups at the RFU?
Both, the same thing, really. Same thing. And like, I think Munster, if the Munster hierarchy felt they weren't getting the support of the RFU, well, do something about it. Do something about it. Like, cause a racket. You know what I mean? Don't be a pawn in a game of chess. Stand for yourself. Stand up for yourself. You're a historic province. You've offered a huge amount to Irish rugby since Irish rugby came into existence. There's potential there to offer a huge amount in the future. Stand up for yourself and not be allowed to be pushed around, because effectively it'll all play out on the field eventually. And potentially that URC title was a bad thing for them, because they thought they were maybe on the right track, or the executive maybe thought they were on the right track, or they could get away with spending less. But that's not the case. That's not the case. And I think if you're, they may get a bounce. They may get a bounce of a different voice. But realistically, I think if you were top six coach in any of the other regions or franchises, you wouldn't swap your squad for the Munster squad as it is today. And that's how I see it. Now, maybe they'll prove me wrong, but I don't think that squad, you put them up against the other teams in the URC, the top six coaches top six as they stand today, would not swap their squad for Munster's. And that shouldn't be the case. That squad should be strong on paper, strong on the field. And I don't think it's as strong as it needs to be. And I think if you're Graham Rowntree, you're the fall guy. You've got to come out and answer the press, whatever, twice a week and make excuses and promise to get them better. But maybe better is not good enough. Maybe better is not good enough for where Munster should be. And that's not just Graham Rowntree's fault. That's an executive issue as well.
Yeah, and Johnny, like in terms of the why has this happened and why now, like as Bernard mentioned, obviously they've had a poor start to this season. But when you break down the fixtures, three of those four defeats are defeats that you can kind of understand, to be totally honest. The Zebre one is the bad one, obviously. But also then you look back at the last two seasons where there have been slow starts and there's enough credit in the bank there that, a coach like Rowntree has proven he's been able to turn things around and they obviously peak a little bit later in the season. So if obviously, as we say, it's a by mutual agreement was the decision. So you're trying to figure out who initiated this conversation. It always starts from one side. Rowntree and Ian Flanagan, the CEO, didn't walk into a room together at the same time and say, you know what, I think we both need to call this quits. So if you're trying to figure out was it a sacked? Was it a resignation? If you're looking at the sack side of things, it certainly doesn't appear that it's purely based on results, because that set of six results isn't really enough to get a coach sacked so early in a season.
I don't think so. I don't with the amount of injuries they've had. But again, there's been a historical issue there for the last number of seasons with things like that. I was absolutely shocked yesterday when you're paying and it pops up on your phone and you're like, what? I was like, that's first and foremost, so kind of a foot in both camps. I played with Wigg. I played in his last ever game for Leicester, and you could not meet a nicer, genuine fella than Wigg. And I think he bought into what Munster was from the minute he was there, even from when he was speaking about was he going to get the head coach job. And he was so open and honest about that. He was like, I'd love that, and I think that's and what he's done along with his other coaching staff to win that URC in the way that they did was phenomenal. And I think maybe Birches, there is certain that people potentially might have got ahead of themselves in the sense of, how they did that was old school Munster style against, backs against the wall, and they kept producing. And I think there was a bit of disappointment last year in not potentially replicating that. And then obviously, but for this to come out of the blue like this, yeah, it's very hard to kind of get your head around because I think Wigg has been excellent for Munster and what he's done. And I think you have to look at the overall. You also have to look at, we can go into historical kind of Munster were the team that drove professional rugby in Ireland, drove the provincial kind of rivalry and really stepped up to the plate. But then you go back to the time when I signed and they'd won a couple of European Cups, they were still very much a European high power. But the players were spending 4 or 5 hours in a car driving between Cork and Limerick. They were the only professional side that had, and they've two cities, I get that. But like in terms of the contact time that people, we spoke about that at the start, about the young lads that I have, the contact time that you miss by sitting, 3, 4 hours in a car all the time. So like for me, coming into that environment, the team that made Irish rugby what it was, from the 2000s on, they overperformed because of what they had to deal with. Like they were incredible. And you go back to that, and it just kind of a bit, when you get down and think about it, it's just like, this shouldn't be happening, and there is a level as a past player, a bit of frustration about that, because we're in a stage now where, like Bert says, if you're not happy with something, there's ways and means that you can kick up a fuss about it, And I just think that, look, it'll all come out in the wash eventually, and we'll all find out what exactly happened in a couple of months' time. But it's very hard to kind of go through it all and be like, because obviously Wigan is a great man, Munster's a great club. It's just doesn't seem right that it's kind of happened in this fashion and in this way.
Yeah, and Bernard, I think Johnny's kind of actually echoed a lot of the sentiment that was around from a lot of the Munster supporters I would have seen yesterday, where the general reaction to this was like, why on earth has this happened? Because it something Johnny said obviously, as well as having played with Rowntree back in his Leicester days, like he was a very, very good fit personality-wise for Munster as a province and the whole Munster thing that we've grown to know down the years, and he very much bought into all of that. And I think that's why so many of the supporters were so unhappy yesterday when that news came out.
Yeah, absolutely, because they actually appreciate his honesty, his commitment, the effort he made to buy in to be part of that province. And I actually thought he got effed around a bit around, the head coach position initially. They made him wait a long, long time, if you remember. And actual fact, he in the end he kind of probably too honest for his own good. He basically said that's really affecting his mental health, this stress of not knowing, if you remember. And again, that's probably not the right way to treat somebody who wants to be part of your organization at a higher level, wants to help, reform a squad, which obviously after Johan, needed to go a different direction. So he's been always ultimately committed, from what I can see. Obviously, there's a Simon Lewis in the Examiner today is
We'll get to
yesterday.
that in a second,
Yeah,
yeah.
a second. Okay, so, but like Ian Flanagan, if rumors are to be believed, was down to the shortlist for the FBI job, and do you end up on a shortlist for that without applying for it or interviewing for it? I doubt it. So, maybe Wig didn't see the same level of loyalty above him. And I don't know. I'm jumping to conclusions here, but like I think the kind of fella he is, and we're looking at it, and we see it when Munster lose. We see him when Munster don't perform well, and his post-match press conferences. He's not an actor. He doesn't try and talk nonsense or business jargon to buy the 2 minutes that the TV cameras have. He actually, to be honest, I actually feel I feel sometimes he's nearly too open for his own good. He's exposing his soul to the public. But that's him. That's him. And I think that's why he's incredibly highly respected in the world game, and he'll go on and get a great job somewhere else. And in hindsight, people will look and see what he had and realize that he did a hell of a job. He brought through a lot of youngsters. And like, I'll give you an example. Like, this squad isn't, and some people say, oh, it's his fault, but I don't think it's laden down with a huge amount of talent. And like, I get lots of abuse over the last couple of years from Munster fans saying to me that Andy Farrell is biased against Munster players. But I think Andy Farrell is picking the best players in Ireland by and large, right? And that's playing out on the field. But like Tom Farrell, Connacht decided not to keep Tom Farrell. He's got loads of ability, but he's been Munster's best player this season. You know what I mean? So that I would say, well, that's brilliant for Tom Farrell and fair play to him. But what about all the other players in Munster? Who've been there, have been settled, understand the game plan, and have had consistency. Why aren't they putting their hand up for international selection? So I would say the book stops as much with above Graham and underneath him as fault lies with him. I think that's how I would sum it up now, without knowing the intricate details of what's happened over the last couple of weeks. But I think that his reputation worldwide will still be very strong after this.
Yeah. Sticking with above Graham Rowntree then, because you kind of mentioned there's a story in the Irish Examiner today, and you mentioned the CEO, Ian Flanagan. And I think that brings us nicely to the next point I was going to make, which is, I would say, more of my own thoughts than a question. You can feel free to jump in and give your thoughts after it. But I just think after yesterday and reading that statement, the Munster supporters, more than 25,000 of whom are going to be at Thomond Park this weekend for a game against the All Blacks 15, deserve so much more clarity than that statement that was put out yesterday that just said, you know what, the head coach that won us our first title in 12 years, less than 18 months ago, we've all decided we're going to call it quits. Thanks for the efforts. Graham says, thank you and I had a great time and we'll all move on. And, you know, we have a new interim head coach and we'll start looking at the future. I actually think it's a bit insulting to just drop a statement out like that. And, you know, Ian Costello probably is ultimately going to be the man who's going to answer, have to answer the questions later on this week and be in that unenviable position. But it just kind of leads me to a couple of questions that I think the higher ups at Munster seriously need to actually answer now. If this was a decision by Munster to get rid of Graham Rowntree, why have the results become so unacceptable? Why now? Why are you doing this 6 games into a season? Why was a coach that won a title just over a year ago not given more time? But also similarly then, if this was Graham Rowntree's decision to walk away, how did relationships break down so badly in the last 12 months that a coach who has, you know, embedded himself into Munster and into Limerick where he's been living for the last few years, how has everything gone so badly for him in the last few months that he decided that he felt he needed to walk away? As you mentioned, there's a piece in The Examiner, Simon Lewis was writing. He seems to be the only person so far who's had an inkling of what's been going on in there in the analysis that we've kind of seen in the last day or so. He says, it appears his exit was already being discussed before the Sharks game, not least by him. Talks are understood to have been ongoing for some time between the head coach, the Munster Rugby Board and its Professional Games Committee, on which both Rowntree and Chief Executive Ian Flanagan sit without voting rights. So what Simon is saying here is that, you know, this exit strategy has kind of been in the works for a few months and obviously something isn't right. And Rowntree and the board have been talking about this. And I know Simon, I would generally believe what he's saying. I would say he's pretty much in the know when it comes to these sorts of things. So I would take those quotes at face value. So if that's the case, and this has been something that's been in the works for a few months, how is there not a strategy laid out as to who's going to come in? And you have someone stepping up 6 games into a season to be interim head coach and we start the recruitment process now.
I'll go first. That's not how things should be done. But then did it get to a stage where, you know, did something happen over the last week to 10 days that was the catalyst for, okay, these were conversations. I don't feel I'm getting the support or you're not doing the right job. One side or the other then said in a meeting, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, and then it just got to breaking point and that's it. But it's very, you know, I didn't hear any of those conversations going on, you know, I didn't hear anything through the grapevine about any of that. It's weird. It seems like something has happened over the last 2 weeks that one or both have said, right, I'm done. And if that's around recruitment or, you know, there's different things going around social media or people have said that it might be over trying to sign an extra prop because of the injuries they have. And maybe that for Wig was right. Well, if you're not going to support me on that, look, and with all the conversations that have been going on, that's me. But why then, if these conversations started a number of months ago and they're saying, and that's being said in that why don't they have a succession plan that's clear, that's stated, that's okay, well, and come out with a statement, look, Graham's going to serve until the end of the year, here's our succession plan, and bang, 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 and away you go from there. But I just think in the overall, it has been handled very badly.
Bernard, obviously then as well, you have like, there have been stories here or there. There have been rumours popping up every now and again that relationships between Rowntree and some senior players haven't been great. Like Rowntree came out only, I'd say less than a couple of months ago and flat out denied that himself and Peter O'Mahony had had a falling out, which was the big rumour around last year. Obviously all of that feeds into it as well. And you start to wonder how much truth was in all of those. How much do you think the players need to take responsibility though for some of the performances, particularly over these last few weeks, where like some of the tries they're conceding, where it is just simply players either not folding around a corner of a ruck or folding around far too far and just leaving gaps on the fringe, simple errors?
100%. When I'm talking about not having the playing squad, I'm talking about to win a European Cup or to win another URC. To concede some of the tries they've conceded, even against Connacht in the first game, it was so soft. Obviously, the week after against Ebra, was pathetic, really, some of their defense. And then they manned up and muscled up against Ospreys, but the weather conditions meant they had no choice. I mean, they were so compact in defense. Unless you're actually going to let someone run over you, you're going to make a tackle there. And then in Leinster was a bit better, and then obviously the last 2 weeks have been poor. So for sure, players need to take the way they're performing isn't at their maximum level. And some people will say, well, the head coach has got to take responsibility for that, and maybe he has. Well, I think the problem is for someone like Graham Rantree or Cott, everyone looks at what's happening below and talks about player unrest or player revolt or whatever. But it's also what's happening above you is just as important, because that affects what's happening below you. So, if Graham Rantree was the person who delivered, had to deliver a tough conversation to Peter O'Mahony, that's all not in Graham Rantree's control. If he's been told to reduce his budget by 1.2 million, 800,000, and suddenly you have a player who, for the previous, I don't know, 8, 9 years, 10 years, has been free, and suddenly he's now going to take 150, 200, 250 off your wage bill, and you're reducing your budget by 1.2 million or 1 million, or that's a big decision to make, right? And that decision, there's no way it was done in isolation, right? But he's the one who's probably delivering that message to a player, whatever. But the reality is he's delivering the message, but it might necessarily be the sole person in charge of the decision, or decision is he, his decision he wants to make is to make try and make the maximum use of his budget. So this is the issue. And a little bit like Man United or whatever, Erik ten Hag, the dressing rooms do have to take responsibility for a lot of what happens. But I think Wig is probably old school, and he probably cares a lot, right? And that's he probably cares, and maybe cares too much. But a lot of the modern dressing rooms, they can just park it. They use the business term "start over," turn the page. Monday at 12 o'clock, we have to start over. We can't look back. And there's a lot of benefit in that, right? Because obviously, there's no point looking back all the time. But there's also a little bit of personal responsibility to the jersey wear, to have a little bit of hurt, a little bit of pain, and not let it happen again. And I think Wig isn't the guy who can turn the page quickly. I think he desperately feels embarrassed by a poor Munster performance, and he won't be happy until there's redemption on the field. Whereas, certainly in other dressing rooms, my example in the Dragons, I'll give you that. The Dragons and Munster are different, whatever, because the Dragons don't have the history Munster had. But I couldn't believe that players could go 5, 6 weekends in a row, not win, and Monday just want to play, play tip or have a day off, or have a fry up or whatever. It's just different. And you either make the decision that you're actually okay with that, and you're just going to roll with it, or you actually try and fight it and try and improve things. And I wouldn't ever blame Graham Rantree for not accepting poor standards or underperformance, because I think someone at the end of the day, those players in time in years to come, if they don't have the success that they want to have, they'll regret not having a hard ass. And look at Michael Cheika. I mean, Leinster, he came into Leinster, he did that. Now he's doing it with Leicester Tigers. I mean, you talk to Leicester Tigers players
Yeah,
who,
well, yeah.
it's
They're loving it.
they're
They're
loving it,
absolutely loving it at the moment.
They're receptive to it. But it won't be easy. It'll be hard, and he'll call them out. But that it depends on the mindset of the group you have. So look at that. Yeah, I would say Graham obviously will take responsibility for things he should have done better, could have done better. But I also think you need to look up and look down here, and the blame should be shared across all three, probably, rather than just him.
The next question then, who comes next? How are they going to do this? So Ian Costello, head of rugby operations, is going to fill in as interim head coach while the permanent plan is found, I would say Ian Costello is probably a live candidate to actually stay in that job going forward, and maybe there's some sort of reshuffle going on below. Johnny Felix Jones and Ronan O'Gara are the two names that have been thrown out.
Felix is the only one. Felix is the only one.
The only one.
Yeah, for me. Again, I'm biased. I was with him on Friday with Bert, but
can I jump in and ask you a question on top of that then as well? Like, how realistic is it that Munster can go and get him? Is probably the next question, because I think everyone would agree he would be a good candidate.
Yeah, I think that for me, how this gets resolved is probably three people in a room. You have one person from Munster, you have one person from the RFU, and then you've a representative, either Felix or a representative of Felix, and they come to an agreement. You know, and that's whether that can suit everyone at one. You know, for me, and there's, for someone like Felix, there's two potential jobs now. I felt there was only one previously, and that was the Lions defence that, you know, would suit him and suit all partners again, where now this isn't in the international space. It might be something that would suit him. He knows the place. It's where he started. He's gone away for 6 years, 7 years, got incredible experience, has a detail level and a commitment level like potentially no one else in the game, and he really cares about a red jersey. That can probably be one of his biggest weaknesses, but also one of his biggest strengths. And then it's where he fits in with that dynamic. And then what does he take over? Is there a bit of a reshuffle if he comes in? He's head coach and he leads D, and, you know, you move people around underneath or what? But for me, and with zero skin in the game, I just think, looking at it, I think Jonesy's probably the only one. There was a list, obviously, on Twitter and different things yesterday around, like, Raj, Paulie, but, like, outside of emotion, you look at it from a professional standpoint, does it suit any of them right now? Probably not. Mm-hmm. But professionally, going back into the club game from international, bit of a change from family life perspective, but he's lived in Limerick before. He's been a part of the coaching staff, understands what a day-to-day, what a season plan looks like. Yeah, I think for me, Jonesy be one of the, he'd be top of the list, and if I'd have a short list of one, it'd be him.
Bernard?
Yeah, I think he'd be a great choice. The whole thing about, is it realistic? Like, this is the problem now. This is the problem where Munster, the RFU have left the provinces. Yeah. That we have such a net closed mindset. Like, think back to the day, was it, when they signed Orgy Simon and Damien Delande, was it likely? No. When they signed Dougie Howlett, when they signed Christian Cullen, when they signed Razzy Erasmus, it was unlikely, but they made it happen. Right? They made it happen. Felix Jones, if they want Felix Jones, and I think he would be an inspired choice, just make it happen. Like, he's out of, he's actually technically, he's in limbo at the moment, but yeah, you know, he's not attached to a club as such, right? So he has a connection to Munster, a deep connection. He's gone off and proved himself to be one of the best assistant coaches in the world. He has all the attributes of someone who could be an excellent head coach. He's young for sure, but I think the pressure of trying to win back-to-back World Cups is, in a country, rugby mad country like South Africa, with the players that he had who demand excellence, demand guidance, I think it's on par. So I would say, you know, Munster need to stop looking for handouts or looking for permission to do this and take on an RFU fellow who has all his badges in the RFU. Fuck that. If Felix Jones is the best coach, like, the reality is, you can't, this is the problem, right? So you can't starve them of playing quality and coaching quality. The same, you can do one or the other. You got to say, right, we're going to get a puppet to coach them. We're going to give them five or six X-factor players.
Yeah.
Or we're going to give them young Irish qualified players But we're going to give them the best possible coaching setup. So that's where it's at. And if it means going up to the RFU, if the RFU are the ones holding Munster back, well then get up the road and make your case, because this is debt by a thousand cuts. Like, the three provinces are weaker this year than they were last year. Maybe Ulster, because of the change of voice and Richie's coming in, have given them a lift. But realistically, you put the Connacht, Munster, Ulster squads on paper and you compare them to last year, the year before, they're weaker, right? And I don't see how that's good for Irish rugby long term. And like, if Leinster are able to have two head coaches, which effectively they have in terms of budget, right?
Yeah.
Between
yeah.
Jacques and Leo, and I admire Leinster for doing this. I admire Leinster for having the foresight and the capacity to do it. Well, like, don't be trying to get everyone else to scrimp and save on their head coach, you know. So that's my feeling on it. Yeah, I would agree. Felix is the man. I have no inside track whether he wants to go back to club coaching, but I'd say if there was a club coach job that he would look at, it'd be Munster, because he is incredibly proud of being a Munster player and a Munster coach in the past.
Right. Well, you've sold me on the idea. Just go and make it happen, Munster top brass. We'll park Munster now and we'll take a quick tour of the other three provinces who were in action at the weekend. No games, obviously, this weekend. We're at the 1/3 stage of the URC regular season and the break weekend ahead of the Autumn Nations series coming up now. Broad strokes, Leinster 24-6 win against the Lions, missed out in the bonus point. Solid win all round against a Lions team that, in fairness, were pretty game and, you know, came to Dublin not really to play but to frustrate Leinster, and they did that in large parts. But Johnny, you're Leo Cullen, 29 points out of a possible 30 to start the season. There's been loads of rotation. You've got a decent amount of minutes into your frontline internationals. You're loving life at the moment.
Yeah, like, I think, you know, they're winning well. They're not massively fluent in probably yet in their attack shape. But I think their D and what they did, particularly against Munster, like, that was a really good performance. That has come forward for me. I think that has come forward. But they're kind of just, they'll play in a 10-minute spark and then the game will be won and that'll be it. Where I think of all their performance probably Saturday watching, it probably wasn't as fluent. Now, to be fair, Lions are, they're a really good team. So, but yeah, I think you can't really ask for much more. He's integrated everyone back in. RJ Snyman has already proven to be, you know, he's fit. He's lasted a couple of games. He's making a big difference for them. So when they get into, you know, the melting pot of those Champions Cup games and, you know, later rounds, that X factor is going to be really important to them. But yeah, look, job done. First block, top of the table, 29 points. Yeah, can't ask for much more bar 1 point extra. But yeah, like, it's a decent start.
I slight little tangent, Bernard, but I am always fascinated by the Lions, because it seems like every year they lose better players year on year. Anytime they have a couple of decent players, it gets lost to one of the other three franchises in South Africa or off to Europe as well or something like that. And yet consistently they seem to be kind of getting a little bit better year on year in the URC. They strike me as a team who are quite well coached by Ivan Van Rooyen.
Yeah, and Ivan was quite a contentious appointment a couple of years ago, because he actually... his background is S&C. It's not really rugby. And but what he's done is, which I love, is he's brought in really experienced coaches. So Jacques Fury is coming as defence coach, obviously. They say in South Africa, he obviously spent time in Japan as well, but they say in South Africa that he was the Johnny Sexton of his generation, like the brains, and very tactical. And by all accounts, he's going to be an excellent defence coach, probably already is, because their defence at the weekend, like, to stop Leinster getting the bonus point, is success in itself. Ricardo Lobster was with Heineke Meyer with the box, coached in France in the top 14. Morne Steyn is the kicking coach. So he's brought in some real, their scrum coach spent time in top 14 as well. So they brought in a kind of a young coaching group, but who are all really ambitious. And to be honest, this is what really impressed me. I spent a few days with them last week. They they kind of accept their place in the hierarchy of South African rugby because they don't have a sugar daddy. So they know they're going to lose their players. And kind of their attitude is, well, you know, best of luck to you. You know, that if this means you're going to have a better family life, it means you can provide for your future, well, then go do it, whether that's to go to the Sharks or that's to go to the top 14. And they back their academy system, they back their development squads, they back their Currie Cup team, and they try and create really good alignment there. So they're not crying about that. They just say, look, this is the group we have for this year. And we know that maybe there'll be six or seven of our best players won't be here next year, but so be it. We have a production line that's coming through. And in some ways, like, they don't get spooked by line speed because, you know, it's been part of South African rugby for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, because Jack has been drilling that with the four franchises. So they were less spooked by it than the recent opponents Leinster have had. And then they had the power to be able to handle RG in particular. They couldn't, Doris gave them a lot of problems, but they seemed to have a real, whenever RG carried, there was a real intent there to not allow him be as dominant, which probably opened up, you know, there was more focus on RG than Doris, and Doris exploited that. A good kicking game. They kicked long, and Leinster kicked it back to him, and they looked to counter-attack. And they thought he could hurt Leinster in the counter-attack, but didn't really, which is good Leinster defence. Set piece that has consistently been really strong and gave Leinster problems. So they had all the raw materials to be a good goal kicker. I know he only got 6 points, but they were able to just take those shots at goal and, you know, keep the game competitive for a long time. I actually thought, Leinster would learn a lot from it, but they made Leinster look human. And you see the Sharks, how they're developing, you see the Bulls. Leinster mightn't have it all their own way. When they play against the top three or four teams, it'll certainly be competitive, you would think.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of bring that up. I really enjoyed watching the Lions the other night. I just think they always just seem to put up a really good fight every week with fairly limited resources compared to everyone else. And as you mentioned, sorry, as well, Johnny, like Bernard mentioned him, Caelan Doris. He looks like he's playing with a proper swagger in the last few weeks.
Yeah, he's been exceptional every game. I just can't get over his footwork close contact, like from a technical thing. He's always like, it's just his double step in. He's getting soft shoulders all the time. He's just getting better and better every week. You know, it's going to be brilliant to see what he does. You know, Friday week and how he builds into the autumn series. So yeah, really looking forward to seeing him. But I just think of all, let's call it, his footwork close quarters is just insane. It's just insane, and it's class to watch.
Yeah, I think he's gonna have a big game against the All Blacks. He told us after we were speaking to him after the game in the press conference on Saturday night, and we were asking about New Zealand, and he specifically said he loves Friday night games. So mark that one down. He's going to have a big game next week. Ulster, 21-19 beaten by Cardiff, 19-0 up at one stage, Bernard. What happened there?
I think it's a bit of madness from McCann, a bit of ill-discipline. It was a turning point, obviously, Ulster getting held up. And just that little bit of naivety that Richie kind of flagged during the summer, that there's going to be days like that. And in fairness, I think Cardiff handled the halftime really well. Matt Sherratt, the coach, did an interview afterwards, and he was saying he was booed off the pitch at halftime, and he was nearly given a standing ovation after the game. He carried on people's shoulders, which shows you what coaching can be like, and probably feeds into Wigs' turmoil. But it was a game that Ulster will regret at the end of the year. I still think it's been a positive block for them. Cardiff's bench actually, you know, made much more impact than Ulster's. You have to be learnings from it, but realistically, it was a great weekend for the Welsh regions. Three out of four Welsh regions won. So they're going to November camp on a high. But for Ulster, yeah, that was a big slip up, and I think it's to be expected to a certain extent, because there's a lot of youth in that team, but Richie would be disappointed because there was 5 points there for the taking, rather than one.
Like, Johnny, from a coaching point of view, like, you're obviously well used with your time at Nace now, where, like, you know, you're working in blocks of games where you'll have like 3 weeks on, a week or two off, and so on and so forth. Is a defeat like that, does that hurt more at the end of a block?
Well, you probably are reviewing it for, you know, you're reviewing it longer than other games because you've nothing to build into this week, you know, this weekend. I just think, it's just bitterly frustrating for them. You felt that they'd kick on and what that would have given them momentum-wise if they'd gone on and, you know, it'd be 26-7 or, you know, like, so it's a frustrating one for them. But as Bert said, Richie had already flagged that there are going to be days like the weekend for them. So, yeah, disappointing. I think, you know, you look at the three tries that Cardiff got, all came off Mauls. They all had advantage off them, you know, so they need to look at that. That's an area of improvement. But then it's just being able to keep doing what you're doing when you're 19 points up. You don't need to change a whole lot. Just keep getting after it. And sometimes those lapses in concentration or moments of madness can really hurt a younger side trying to find their way.
And then finally, Bernard, Connacht 31-7 against the Dragons, boxed it off fairly comfortably, I think, as you had predicted last week as well. But three wins, three defeats through these opening six games. They're fifth in the table. 18 points, I think, is an important thing to bring up because you're putting in a good few bonus points in there, even from a couple of the defeats they've had as well. I would say if you'd offered Pete Wilkins that points total, excuse me, and that position in the table before the start of the season, he'd probably have taken the offer fairly quickly.
No, 100% he would. And there's elements within those games that he'd be absolutely delighted about. Their defence wasn't tested against the Dragons. Yeah. The Dragons' attack was poor. But I think that'll be the area of focus for them. I think their line-out mold has improved. It's a weapon now. Elements of their attacking game is very strong. Their bench, you know, the likes of Matthew Devine or Ford coming on. Boyle was used as a sub earlier on in the competition and was given a big impact. So Tierney Martin has been good off the bench. So they're getting the maximum out of their matchday squads. But I still have a fear about them defensively, and I still have a fear as the season goes on. Now the Challenge Cup will give them a chance to rotate a bit more. Yeah. But I just wonder about their squad depth. But certainly at the moment, they'll be pretty content of the start they've had. They obviously haven't gone to Ulster, haven't gone to Thomond as well. Mm-hmm. So that's done now. And they played Leinster once. So it's been a good start for them in terms of return.
On go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think in terms of things that are firing, like you look at Blade's second try, offered everything, that showed everything that they have to offer an attack. You know, their shape was really good there, some really good offloading in behind shoulders, just in general. I think that's why I personally, and I've said it loads of times on here already, I love watching them. I like when they're in full flow like that. In terms of their attack shape, they really play. And I think Mark's flying there. When they get the opportunity to play like that, they're brilliant to watch.
Yeah, so I think it's Connacht at home is their next game after the November block. So if they could grind out any kind of a win there, they'd be set up really nicely ahead of being able to rotate players for the Challenge Cup, get yourself up till Christmas. All of a sudden, you have a week off. It's like, when you're working off a fairly limited squad, Bernard, it probably is just about managing the blocks bit by bit and getting yourself through.
Yeah, 100%. And I said it last year, I genuinely believe the Challenge Cup is perfect for them to be able to have a better league position.
To get into the Champions Cup, where they'll probably end up having a tough run.
By that stage, your Matty Devine, your Hugh Gavin, your Kyle Ford, etc., will be a year further on, and they'll be relishing Champions Cup. Maybe they'll have a right crack off the Challenge Cup. But the problem with Challenge Cup is once you get to the business end of it, some of those big teams start to take it seriously and you could have wasted a lot of energy.
Challenge Cup a case of see how it goes until the knockout stages and, you know, see where the chips fall, and if you're in contention, go for it come April.
Yeah, 100%. But I think it's gone harder. It's gone harder now. There's, I think 4 or 5 years ago, you know, a team like Connacht could have said, right, that's a great trophy for us to win, and they still can. But like, I think that the effort you're put into winning it, given the way their squad is now, a lot more youngsters, might actually affect their league form. And I personally think the team like Connacht league form should be the priority this year.
Yeah, well, they've had a good start of the season so far. As I said, fifth in the table, 3 wins, 3 defeats. 18 points. And that is where we will leave it for the podcast this week. Fellas, it's been a pleasure. And as I said, we will be back for 2 podcasts next week. The first of which possibly Tuesday, could even be Monday, but we'll wait and see. We'll just figure out what way media schedules and things are going. Bernard, thanks again as always. Johnny, best of luck this evening and on Saturday as well. Hope you go well.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
And we'll speak to you again next week.